Welcome, subscribers. We are talking to Christopher Morris, and we are basically continuing our discussion that we had in the regular Red Ice Radio program. One thing that I really wanted to get to, but we didn't have time at the end there, was one idea that Chris presented regarding how kind of there are places in the universe that have order, basically, and another part that have maybe disorder. And one interesting idea that popped up in my head when he said that was that this really connects with quantum physics, basically, where you can have, you know, particles appearing in different places when you measure it, but it isn't until you look at it that the particles jump into their correct place, so to speak. I guess we could translate this to meaning that once we put awareness into the picture or the model of the cosmos, it's first then when order appear. And Chris, I mean, is this something that you kind of alluded to, or I guess the idea that you presented was this Buckminster Fuller.
Yeah. He calls it synergy and entropy, like just areas where, you know, the forces tend to, like you said, find order or, you know, form, you know, yeah, take patterns, show, you know, that intelligent design in a sense, and, you know, other areas of where it's starting to collapse in on itself, you know. And it actually, in my own view, almost goes right to the essence of breathing. You know, you have the inhale and exhale, or the Shiva and the Shakti, you know, the creation and the destruction, areas of where, you know, things are building up and areas where it's kind of being cleared out so that maybe the next cycle of creation can begin.
Ah, interesting, because, I mean, this has to do with, it's always interesting to see how the most, you know, ancients of mythological stories seem to collaborate with you know, the new physics and the new mathematics that we're discovering, because this of course connects with the chaos theory in mathematics and so forth. I mean, that there is parts, I guess, of the universe that are, I guess, in some sense totally in disorder, but it is that that way of things that set up for order, basically. Because
You know, that's really the will of creation. A creation coming through is, you know, it creates something, expands, it shows, because there's that playful quality in the universe as well, and there's a communicative, you know, and that's like a grand scale communication, you know, life to find form, to give, you know, like you could almost see a solar system as just like an art project.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think that the we talked about this earlier a little bit, the nature of music and how this connects with you know, the spheres in that sense, because there was one time when the belief was that the spheres themselves, the planets that were known at the time, represented the different musical notes and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, Pythagoras talked about music of the spheres a lot, and you know, I originally learned that back in university, and it was taught to me as not, you know, not a literal thing, you know, but maybe more just like a way of perceiving something. But I've come to find that it is quite a literal thing, you know, that planet, and it's maybe even not as basic and static as one might imagine. You know, when we were talking about this earlier, I started with the Om vibration, which is always a good place to start. You know, that first there's that basic, you know, we've all seen people meditating and just kind of going, oh. And one thing that does is it raises your vibration. You know, it starts, that's one, if you want an instant way to kind of peak your energy up into the fourth dimension, if you just simply do that, the Om, a basic Om meditation, you know, maybe a couple times a day, 15 minutes for a little while, your whole reality will change, because you'll suddenly kick like another level of existence into play, and now you got to live with it. You know, I was kind of describing that to somebody, yesterday. It's just how, like, for me, you know, I see what they see, but I also, you know, see creatures popping in and out, or I see, you know, spirits going behind people, or I see, you know, someone's past life, or I see, you know, like my cat, suddenly I see her history of past lives, or I see someone shift into their mythological nature, or, you know, things are warbling in and out all the time.
Yeah.
And you just kind of have to still, you know, you take that, just that observation, that reflection, where you don't really, after a while, you don't think anything is strange, so you're not really surprised by anything. You almost get into that state of where the whole universe could disappear, and if you're just still sitting there, you're just like, all right.
It's good. It's all good. Yes, I mean, I guess that's a very, very scary thought, I think, for a lot of people. I mean, because they might have made the connection that reality is the thing that you can, you know, touch on and measure and so forth. That is, of course, the more scientific model of reality. But could that be one of the reasons why people tend to, you know, shift away from that kind of thinking, because it's scary in some way?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why it's preserved in, like, you know, fables or myths, or, you know, just as a story that they think is just like a little story, you know. And there may, then maybe as they go, someone goes on with that, they might come to think of the metaphoric meaning and, you know, meditate on that a little bit. But there's also a quite literal meaning even beyond that. We talked about that a little bit on the show earlier.
Yeah.
How, you know, that these things, you know, first you don't want to believe anything or preconceive anything. You unravel everything and find again for yourself what's true. And then when you raise your vibration, open up to possibilities and start tuning in, you see there's a whole other landscape, you know, kind of what still is the mythological landscape, but you start to perceive mythology differently, because mythology is simply embodying these deeper principles in humanity, and
yeah,
you see some of these reflected in such archetypal symbol systems as like the tarot, or
yeah,
you know, astrology does that too. You know, it gives you a way to relate to this whole other level of communication and depth of human experience.
Do you think that people who were instrumental in helping bring forth some of these models or myths, that they were, you know, really connected with some profound stuff and knew that exactly what they were doing? Or do you think that these stories could have, you know, kind of developed over the years and kind of, like the universe seemed to work, that these ideas kind of work themselves in and become, you know, like there are truths handed down to us, I guess, but it could be from a higher level, from the universe itself, but the people who develop it might not be so consciously aware of it.
I think it has both those aspects. You know, you could take somebody, let's say an individual develops these heroic qualities in themselves. They really come to embody honor, integrity, and they have a huge output of creative work, and they inspire a lot of people, and they give a lot of love, and they get a lot of love in return. You know, this person could then pass away, and they themselves could become almost representative of a certain archetype or these qualities in humanity. And then maybe as time goes on, you know, people kind of do end up shaping them in their own image. But then after a while, the symbol does kind of come to represent this certain aspect in humanity. I mean, I think that's one reason why it's important to study great people in history, you know, because one thing that rocked my view early on is to realize that, you know, there were wise people all along, you know, people that knew these truths in throughout our history, you know, just in scattered here and there. But, you know, there's always on the planet people that truly get the universal aspect, you know, the deepest cosmic meaning, and they may be monitoring things, or they may be saving the truth for a time when the world could receive it more readily, or, you know, who knows what. But there's always been these true traditions that try to encode the deeper aspects of human consciousness.
Absolutely. And I mean, I know that you've been, you know, researching a lot of, I guess, more Eastern-oriented mythologies also, but you think that there is a big difference between the more Western kind of mythologies, or do you think that there is very close similarities between the mythologies all over the world, basically?
Well, I come to kind of accept them all as being having a reality in and of themselves. So in a sense, I don't even say, you know, I say they all are. That's, if you notice in my art or my expressions, I kind of incorporate both some of the expressions of West and East in myself.
Yeah, exactly.
And then turn it around and kind of allow them to mix freely.
Yeah.
You know, because then it creates a really interesting way of looking at life and looking at humanity, and you know, it's very accepting and open and involved, and it's a way also to resolve some of these things. Like you take, you know, a Christian who's really fixated on Jesus, for instance.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get them to break off of that or turn from that.
Yeah.
But what they don't understand is that in the end, your understanding of Jesus becomes much greater than what you used to think he was in your belief. You know, if you see that it was a person embodying Christ consciousness, this huge expanse of awareness, and that he himself was encoding in his own creativity ways to trigger that response in people so that they could feel that consciousness as well.
Yeah, certainly that is a brilliant point, because it's, as you say, it seems to be impossible to break through in that area, because it always refers to that, you know, all these other mythologies are basically pagan or they're evil or this or that, but the true path is through Jesus, but at the same time, the similarities between that mythological or other mythological characters, or even if you believe that Jesus really existed or not, it is, I can certainly see that the same spiritual, you know, the essence of the and the message is there in so many of these different archetypes, basically.
Yeah, I mean, one thing we have to do is freshen them up. You know, I sometimes joke around, you know, well, they say Jesus saves, but I'm trying to save Jesus here, you know, that save him from the, you know, this horrible misconception, you know, that.
Yeah, yeah.
He would want that, you know. But that maybe goes into how you say it. People take the idea and over time shift it into what reflects them and what they want it to be. But we have to go back and kind of freshen these things up by getting to the source ourselves. You know, then we can appreciate Jesus and Buddha and Pythagoras and Socrates and, you know, Osho or Yogananda or Barry Long or Ramakrishna or artists, you know, Alex Gray or the classic composers, Beethoven, Mozart. They become contemporaries.
Yeah.
You know, you find them in spirit. You tune into them on a spiritual level. You know, you see them as aspects of the universe.
Yeah.
Knowing how the universe works, you can interplay with that. You can, in fact, you know, become that. You can tune into that and allow that to manifest through you. You know, I could write a Beethoven symphony based on that kind of a thing. I could tune into Beethoven. You know, I thought about doing some kind of suite or something that I tuned into a few different composers and wrote in that manner, you know, like a Mozart, a Bach, a Beethoven. But, you know, you can truly tune into the spirit that was what provoked their manifestation in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, the human body almost becomes an instrument that the universe can play create these vast tapestries which will eventually provoke consciousness in a soul who's ready to receive it.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, I mean, no whether you got, you know, a Christian background or some other background, I think that as long as you recognize that there is a higher spiritual order in the universe, I mean, then immediately I think you don't fall into the trap of thinking that there are things going on in the universe that isn't, you know, in imperfect order or imperfect place, basically. That's how I see it, at least. I mean, there's no need to worry, I guess, is what I'm saying in that sense, as long as you believe that there is a higher, a higher order to the universe and how things play out.
Yeah, I think that's what we as humanity are trying to digest right now, because, you know, putting everything, like we talked about earlier, information suddenly all being out there, you know, it's like you have the solution. The solution's there, and it's like, you know, eventually the truth will win out because it'll be the last man standing, you know. Everything else will fall away, but what is, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so the, talking about that, the symbols of Christianity, for instance, it's all in, like, you don't want that, just as an example, because it's close to me. I was raised as in Christian, and in one sense it wasn't so bad, you know, and then, but then when you realize that it kind of is limiting your soul in a way, and that that built in that, you know, seemingly innocuous system, there's some pretty, you know, some things you really don't want to do, you know, implant in kids, you know, fear, or, you know, lock them in on just, you know, certain moralities which aren't necessarily so, or even portray it as if it's the only thing, and anyone who doesn't follow it is wrong, you know. I mean, these are all part of, you know, my experience, and I believe my experience was a pretty normal one for someone growing up in a, you know, Christian community. There's just all kinds of little things in there that just don't need to be there. You know, you could listen to a sermon and think, hey, that's not bad, and then at the end they always give you the kicker, you know. They you know, they always just say, well, you know, believe and that's that, or, you know, are you gonna
burn
go
in
hell or something?
Exactly.
And it's funny, it's like the punchline. I mean, it's just like, you know, because I played, it's funny because also I had a chance to really study this, because I played trumpet, and the one thing a trumpet player does is plays in churches all the time. So I played in, you know, hundreds of churches over the years, all kinds of gigs. And so I've gotten to watch a lot of services, you know, and sometimes it's just total oppression. It feels like it's just crushing me. But sometimes, you know, you hear somebody who's pretty meaning well. You know, some of them have different feels. You know, some of them are darker than others, and some are trying. But it seems like they do. They always come around to some of these strange things. And if we could just lift out of it. You know, I was talking to my sister yesterday about this fact that, and this is what I want to do with Creative Cosmos, is, you know, eventually build it into a real building, a real place people can go to kind of have a, you know, universal spirituality where anything goes, you know, where we, you know, rather than having just a church service centered around a few slices of the Bible or something, you know, you could read anything from quantum physics to, you know, to Buddha, to a modern master, to anything that is growth or helpful, you know, you kind of incorporate that information flow into the spiritual thing, and with an artistic and musical aesthetic, and, you know, set these aspects of humanity free, you know, give people somewhere to look, because there's not much for alternatives here.
Exactly, yeah, and as we mentioned before we began our show here, that it seems like things are getting more and more narrow, and even in our own thinking, I mean, we're closing in on one single point, and cutting away, so to speak, at the edges. I mean, are we a dying breed, or are we going to grow in numbers here?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Sometimes it seems like one, and sometimes it seems like the other, you know. And I think it, well, I think there's some people that it resonates with, you know. Mm. I mean, some people, once they get exposed to that other world, you know, the deeper meaning of life, or, you know, I mean, it's funny because, like we've been bringing up, you can prove some of this scientifically. I mean, it's it's just so obviously so. But it's just so much to handle. You know, you take someone who's not necessarily, you know, really up on at all, and it just seems so far away and so preposterous that it doesn't even relate to their life. But they don't realize that it relates to them in the sense of who they are and how they live and what they resonate in the world. But that's not, they haven't quite figured that part out yet.
You know?
And this is one of the things is that I've noticed there's a whole bunch of people that kind of get, you know, they might think that, you know, they're kind of glad I'm doing what I'm doing, you know, mm-hmm. just to know someone's out there putting that message out or doing, you know, doing that work,
yeah.
and they resonate with it to some extent, yet they've got this life and this world and this other thing, you know, it's like they're kind of trapped in the middle. They don't know how they can resolve their life in the world and those things of which I'm talking about, It isn't necessarily easy to do.
No.
It isn't instant. It isn't, you know, that's how you build integrity, is to make the decisions to create your life in accordance with the truth inside yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this, an image really popped up in my head here. It's a drawing that is in, I think it's Manly Palmer-Hall's book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages. In that book, he's got a really nice picture with, it represents kind of when man enters the age of Aquarius, but he's standing with one foot in the water and one foot on the land. So he's kind of, you know, like between these two worlds and kind of, you know, he's testing the waters to feel like, you know, is it ready to go in? Is it comfortable yet? But I mean, that, basically, I think is it here, because I certainly agree with you. It seems like the most difficult thing is to implement, you know, the kind of ideas and thoughts that you and I have been talking about here in the real world, so to speak, in quotes, the real world, like people, you know, going through their job still and trying to, you know, relax and trying to get perspective on things when you're in the middle of it. I mean, that's really,
right.
really, really difficult thing to do, I think.
Yeah, because not only does it have a mental influence, you have to remember you're in a room full of auras, energy fields that interact with each other. And if you have, you know, five people whose energies are exhibiting one wavelength and you're trying to sustain another, that's a constant exertion in and of itself. You know, it's like when I go out into public, I feel like I'm on a stealth mission. You know, it's like, I'm going on a secret mission to the Walmart or something. You know, and it's like... You maintain your perspective. You maintain, you know, your presence and your awareness, and you go out there. And
yeah.
It can be a really amusing, you know, sometimes, you know, that's one reason the masters have a smile on their face, because it's quite an amusing thing when you walk around looking at things that way and just watching people do what they do and going around or whatever. And, you know, they suddenly, you can even sometimes, like, say if you're in a store, and you can see like a vast landscape of the people. You can almost see where they shift into some kind of a mathematical pattern. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but sometimes you can see just below what's happening. You can see the pattern that's playing itself out, or the form that's being created through these group of people, or that which they reflect, what the wavelength they're resonating upon. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. This is really the the matrix in that sense. I mean, the classical image when these. I guess it's a symbolism there, of course, but I guess that's what you're talking about, the code or the repetition, the pattern, the mathematical construct of how things are, and I guess especially now when things are so boxed in and so closed in their present format. I mean, in that sense, even more so. We can certainly see that it is just a pattern repeating itself. I mean, as you say, people go to the store, they go home, they go to their work, and things are so, untouched, so to speak. And I guess that is the thing that you talked about earlier. That is the Tao, you know, I guess, that we have to make some kind of, you know, catastrophic event to happen, basically, for people to wake up. as you mentioned in your song.
Yeah, when those habits lock you in, you know, when you get so repetitive like that, I mean, life is lively and free and always expressing something new, you know, it, to get to that vibrancy, that freshness, you know, it's you can see when somebody has it because they have a little spring in their step or a dance, you know, they'll dance around or they'll, you know, make you feel good just to be around, or, you know, laughter suddenly becomes okay, you know, or, you know, this is what I try to do with Creative Cosmos, almost is provide a safe place, you know, or a place where people can kind of let down that guard, because I've let it down, you know, I aired it out, I sorted it through, and I did what I had to do to really deal with it in a very serious and profound way. And, you know, and as people are starting their exploration, and, you know, some of the questions they come across, you know, might seem embarrassing or might seem, you know, just totally outlandish, whereas if they send them to me, I could be like, well, you know, this and that's going on, and it's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. It's a sign that you're starting to, you know, get some space, or you're starting to see, you know, when they start, the first signs of awareness is when they start seeing how weird things are, you know, or like people often write me that, you know, I'm in this office somewhere, you know, and it's funny because the signs are similar, because I get emails from all over the world, you know, I can think right now, someone in South Carolina, someone in Ireland, someone in somewhere in South Africa, I think, and people in Australia, and their stories are similar. You know, they they write like, I'm at work, I'm looking around, I don't feel like I fit in. People are just keep doing all this stuff, and you know, I'm trying to express this to the people around me, and they either freak out or they don't get it, or they just tell me to go back, shut up, and go back to work. Basically, you know, you know, get back to your expectations. You know, how dare you think, you know, a creative thought? Because what's happening is that new is entering in. That spirit, that soul of theirs, wants to make an appearance, and in order to do it, you've got to, you know, unlearn all those habits or remove all those expectations and the guilt, you know, that they try to lay on you for getting away from that. And, you know, see, eventually you could probably get to the point of where you could go back into that environment if you had to maintain yourself. You know, you could maintain yourself by keeping space, but until you could get that space inside, it's always going to hurt you.
I couldn't agree more. I think that is the vital thing there, is to, you know, allow yourself to explore, you know, the things that are going on in your, you know, creativity, and just, I mean, I've had this, I guess, question to me a few times regarding, you know, how I can do, I mean, so many different things in that sense that, you know, I like to do music, and I like to, draw, and I like to, you know, do this radio show and do the site and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to me, it's no big deal. It's just that I, you know, felt like doing it, and now here I am. I can do all these different things, but I guess in some sense that it could be very difficult perhaps to just dare to start, you know, doing what you really wish for or want to do.
Oh, yeah. It seems almost like people get it to the point in their head where it's just seems like an impossible dream, you know, and they might have it, but they forget about it or they disconnect with it. But, you know, often you could ask somebody if, you know, if they ever had a dream, and a lot of people will tell you that they did and describe it to you, and it's like, oh, man, you know.
Yeah.
But then, you know, then it goes back into the fact that they feel like reality happened to them.
Yeah.
Rather than that they have the power or the ability to create reality. Mm. Now this goes into, I just had a little bit of weird echo there.
Yeah.
This goes back into the, how that, you know, whether if you believe in some kind of a specific way of looking at things, how that actually affects you, you know, in the long run, you know, where if you have these beliefs in something that's very limiting, then you kind of limit yourself, and maybe those beliefs end up keeping you from living that dream because you had to do the responsible thing, or you had to do what everyone else would look up to you for. You know, it's pretty classic, you know, seeking praise, seeking awards, seeking trophies, seeking certificates, seeking accolades from the world while your inner life suffers, you know. And then if you turn to the inner life and you stop playing the games of the world kind of takes a revenge on you. And a lot of people can't get over that revenge or can't deal with that revenge, which is why you have to really cultivate your center, your solidity that, I have a right to do this. This is the truth. This is me. This is what I see. There's nothing. This isn't a choice I'm making. I'm not down there with one belief arguing against your belief. I am seeking to be free, and you're trying to bring this belief to me, and it's harmful, and I don't want to play that game. I will stay in my center and connected to the source, living the truth that is my truth no matter what.
Exactly. Yeah, because I mean, we hear so much about freedom basically, and that if we got one thing at least here in the Western world, it's the freedom to do what we want, and the possibility to project our dreams and do what we want. But I mean, it's so ridiculous, because first of all, it's very difficult to define the freedom. And then when we really examine ourselves and our own culture, of course, we experience the fact that we are very, very controlled and very confined to our little space, basically. And as you say, I guess that just because we always don't follow the basic route that everyone follows, you know, to get a job and earn money in that sense. I mean, we have people out there who are trying to pursue their dreams and trying to achieve something creative. And I mean, it's a really shame when people feel, I guess, guilt over what they do, that they haven't, you know, confined into the system and, you know, contribute in quotes to how things are going. I mean, I see it like we could really zoom out of the picture and take a look at the society as it is now, and then we can discover that it is the system that is, you know, slowly killing the human soul, and the only reasonable thing to do here is to completely, you know, go outside of it and start doing our own thing that really nurtures the human soul.
Yeah, exactly. And in order to do that, some of the things that we are, you know, considered, well, like for instance, culture itself, like Western culture itself, it essentially will no longer survive, because it will become something else. It will be a seed that sprouted into something else, which is what its success is. We don't have to say Western culture is this way and on and on and on and on. We have to completely live this way. When we've had that experience, we've learned that which they had to offer. And, you know, this is the beauty of incorporating West and East, is because eventually it ceases being either and just becomes this synthesis of world ideas, which really makes its own sense, and each of us can take those pieces and create our own path to understanding and self-realization through it.
Yeah, Chris, do you think that the ultimate conspiracy in that sense is to portray, you know, we hear so much about the one world government and the new world order, but to me it seems like the real thing that the elite are trying to suppress is the fact that we are trying to establish a united world in that sense. I mean, it seems like there are a lot of, you know, nationalistic thinking out there who still want to, you know, I guess it's a quite a difficult thing to grasp here or explain.
I know what you mean.
Yeah,
that,
because,
you know, states themselves, just the concept of state or nationalism itself ends up being unsustainable, because there isn't such a thing.
Exactly.
In
yeah.
the universe, there's no such thing as that. There's no such thing. You know, for me, a government's success is to create systems that will support the earth in perpetuity, on and on and on. It just will hum along, you know, and until we have that, we haven't found the solution. I think the solution can be found. You know, it's just these old ways, you know, see, these ways of governing are the ways that are in accord with five sense perception and the mind space, you know, mental realm, you know, where they're not built in for the heart, or
yeah,
you know, to cultivate trust, or to create people who are, you know, whole,
yeah,
know, that can express themselves strongly and, you know, dare to push the envelope and to, you know, to study everything and then come up with completely original thought, which was in the universe, but they were the one who were meant to reveal it, you know, which then leads to belief, you know, so we have all this potential talent and brilliance and ideas that are lying dormant in people,
yeah,
that if they were set free, it wouldn't even take anything for the world to be, you know, to find harmony. You know, if we could apply the technology, you know, freely, if we could just, you know, have everyone who has the capacity, you know, some people have the scientific capacity, some people have the social capacity, some people, you know, have the communication capacity, and all these people, if they didn't have those blocks in their flow, they would be flowing out these solutions. And so the way to keep it from happening is to go right into the individual and, you know, stymie their natural flow.
I wanted to ask you also now, when we have you on the line here, regarding you know, earth changes and things like this, because I mean, this is an interesting idea here, because I mean, you talk a lot about, you know, Gaia and
sure,
our Earth as an aware being and so forth, and there's a lot of talk about, you know, the Earth changes and global warming and all this stuff. I mean, but there are multiple facets, like, to almost everything, of course. But I mean, one take is, of course, that it is all the Earth changes that are going on is all because of man and our pollution and so forth. One take is that it is our Earth who is aware, who are experiencing something unique because of, I don't know, cosmic alignment or something like that. Or it might be some other reason. I mean, obviously it feels like Earth changes are going on. And what's your take on it?
Okay, I'll try to tie in with this with a thread that we were talking about earlier that I wanted to carry on. You can help me get back on track if I get off. But going back to the Om vibration, to start with that, you know, I had mentioned how that can raise your energy level and put you in touch with the astral realm. But also, that is just the meeting point, the phasing in point. And when we were talking about the music of the spheres, and I think that you can, you know, there's a resonant humming of the planet, but there's also a soul music. There's a deeper music. There's the song of the earth herself, you know, and if you can tune into the it will turn from something static like that, something that's just pure vibration, and all of a sudden you may feel spirit come up in it, and you'll even have a smile on your face, and you'll feel as if the energy is reaching up through you, from inside you, and just suddenly you see that you're a part of something, you know, this landscape of just flowing, of celebration, of beauty, and instead of, it becomes, and you'll even feel yourself resonating in the harmonic series, and you'll go up and through this, and you'll feel that spirit take on a life of its own and just sing through you, and you'll know that you are connected. You are a part of that spirit. And you may, while in that state and while singing that song, also see images inside yourself. You know, you see, you know, people you've known and people you've loved and the whole trip of your experience and how everything was leading you to this point of where you could open up to this powerful experience of love and rejoin that which has been going on all along, life in the lotus paradise.
So, I mean, is this Is this a connection to Gaia, tied back to the...
Yeah, all right. Yeah, and so then that gets you to the fact, you know, kind of the spirit that the planetary body itself has a soul and a spirit which, you know, expresses itself in the greenery and in the weather.
Yeah.
You know, and so you have these people, you know, you have people, and they're, and again, we have to remember they're auras. There are these fields of energy.
Yeah.
And the people who have these limited or harmful thought processes or who are a part of this destruction that's going on, you know, it's like a wound, you know, it's like these, in a sense, you know, will stab the earth or, you know, or send these static charges, you know, right into the field of the earth, and it's not in congruence with the love of life on the planet. You know, it's like a foreign invasion.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost another way how you can see that landscape of the cosmic battle and how, you know, a lot of this stuff doesn't belong here. This is not the earth's way. This is not the way it's meant to be, but this is, you know, it just comes from somewhere else.
Yeah.
You can see it's out of harmony. It's out of alignment. And it, you know, that the people who live here or live on the earth and who can open up to this and feel this, you know, will have to exert a certain amount of strength, you know, just as much as you might have to tell a child having a tantrum and, you know, throwing their toys across the room that, hey, now, you know, this is not going to work.
Ah, excellent. Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. And, I mean, I remember reading an article a while back. I can't remember the author now, but he or she talked about this, the mental, I guess it was the environmental danger that is going on the mental level. And he or she had this vision of a kind of like a black cloud over many of the cities on our planet now.
Yeah.
Because there's this really... Yeah, awful mental environment going on here.
Right. So imagine in the astral planes, you know, there's this, you know, you imagine these people, one person's mind, well, this and this, and I got to do this, and I got to do that, and this, and round and round and round. And you times it by minute, it's like, and how the hell are you supposed to do any good creative work with all that craziness going on? How are you supposed to, you know, the earth expresses love, and we as human express love anyway because it's in our nature, but man, it becomes hard to do it. In such an environment,
Is this why, at least, and I think a lot of people who are in the in the creative realm, so to speak, can resonate with this when I say that, is this why then it is so much easier to work on creative stuff during the night than during the day, when a lot of people are asleep?
Yeah, well, that could be part of it, you know. There's a reason monks go away to the Mount Everest or go to their monasteries and close out the world, you know.
Yeah.
It's quite a trick to stay in the world and be not of it, as, you know, Osho used to say. But, you know, you get to a point. I use some of Thich Nhat Hanh's teachings to kind of help me get the idea of where adversity becomes a point of awareness, you know, when you start getting pissed off, that's an opportunity to become more and more present, you know, and so all these things which are maybe difficult to deal with can be used to train yourself to become better and better at what you do, you know, and you just constantly refine your message, you refine your methods, you refine, you know, everything about yourself, you know, it goes on and on and on for all of us, how far we can go with this, and to what, you know, it's a joy to just start with a blank canvas or an empty page and just see what we can come up with. And when we adopt that mindset, then we start to become one with the earth or with the source, because we are also creating, and so we share that creativity, you know, and the creativity is the spirit that unites us, that when we've, that's how we start to feel godlike, is by creating, you know, we can create art, we can create music, we can create a beautiful environment for ourselves. We can create wonderful relationships. We can create, you know, a pleasant afternoon, you know. We can create a little bit of time where just for ourselves. And as you were saying, you know, nighttime, it's a great time. You know, you tend to feel more alone and where there's less interference. And also I think that it's another time where it's a little easier to raise your vibration through to the other side and open up to inspiration.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, how are things over there now? And is it starting to get dark yet over there? No, it's still day for you over there?
No, not quite yet. A couple more hours. A
couple more hours, yeah.
And it will, expecting. It's about 5:30, it gets dark now, 5:30, 6 o'clock.
All right, so you're getting ready for the Halloween party, I guess.
Yep, as we mentioned earlier, today's Halloween, so as soon as we're done here, I'll probably go and get a bunch of candy and bring it back and probably eat half of it before the kids get here and have some friends over and... So, have a great night.
Absolutely. Are you gonna dress up or anything like that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe.
Maybe,
you know,
yeah.
I could dress up as a, you know, I have a, I think a hood or something like that.
Yeah,
like a cloak, or I have an Om t-shirt. I can be some kind of cosmic wizard or something.
That sounds cool.
I'll probably be involved in the trick aspect, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds great. I think we have, you know, we've covered a lot of good ground here today, but I just want to, you know, leave the floor open in the last few minutes here. I mean, is there anything special that you'd like to go into in this last few minutes here that we have?
Yeah, just to, you know, to keep that door open to new possibilities. You know, the spirit really manifests in a way that you can't preconceive. You know, so loosen up the way you look at things. And whenever you see your mind being very rigid or even yourself defending, you know, some very specific context, it may seem to make sense to you in one way, but on a higher plane, you really don't want that dark imprint, because your mind can be facile, it can be fluid, and you can monitor all these things. And it's a different way of looking at things. And it's getting this space from the mind, which is going to give us the capacity to start hearing the language of our own heart. And that's really essentially what's going on for all of us, is that we're learning to open up the heart. We're learning the ways of the heart and the qualities of the heart. And it's not what we used to think it was. We used to know what love was, but when we come to the heart, we find that love is very powerful and has such a magnitude that maybe we didn't know what it was before. And so we need to open up to the possibility of the new and let our imaginations run without crippling it with doubt, and follow through on what you see and your inclinations and what your soul calls you to do, and you'll be creating the roadmap for your own salvation, so to speak. You can find freedom, and you just have to continue to express, reflect upon it, and evolve your concept of life.
Do you think that it is a necessity, so to speak, as the years progress here, to that we have to go further and follow along in our, you know, creative and spiritual process, and it can become, you know, kind of almost dangerous if we try to stop it or hold it back. It can be clogged up, basically.
It will compress. People who don't open up to be free of the information will be crushed by it. I mean, they'll go insane, because the contradictions will be impossible, you know, and everyone will be protecting their denial until the denial gets exposed, and then it'll be utter humiliation and just all this drama and stuff that we just don't really need to be there anymore. You know, it's as simple as admitting that you don't know all the answers yet, and open up to hear some of the things that will help out. I mean, the tools are out there. It's just simply getting over yourself, you know, as a focal point. You have to see that you're a part of the universe, and that doesn't take anything away from you. It only enriches and enhances and gives you a perspective and a joy and a beyond what you even thought was possible from the other perspective. So it doesn't really make sense to protect it, you know. And it's exactly. not something you have to believe. It's something, if you just took the time to experiment with, if you just took the time. I mean, literally, it's, you know, I practically beg people to meditate. Just hear what I'm saying. You know, you just, it's as simple as spending a little bit of time in meditation every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, people might be like, yeah, you know, whatever, but then they don't do it. And then they come back complaining that they don't feel any better, you know, but it's like they're almost avoiding that which would heal them, you know. And it's because of that denial and because of that pain, but we just have to air it out and get it over with and move on with things.
Absolutely, yeah, and yeah, I totally agree. It seems like there's a lot of, you know, fighting going on, as you say, to protect, you know, their opinion or to some extent their own truth. I mean, all that I see that would really help is some to become, you know, more humble towards the experience of life, basically, because it's very, I guess, infantile to claim that we really know what's going on, and that is where the fight, I guess, at the moment is to all this, you know, that we have to basically protect our, you know, our confines to what reality is. And as soon as you let that go and open up and are able to take in everything that is going on around you and you might not accept it out of hand just because it's different or something like that, but as soon as you open up to all the possibilities, there is nothing, you know, you don't need to fight for it, you don't need to worry in that sense for it, because, you know, whatever is going on, and whatever, you know, happens will be fine. It's very simple in some sense, but that's maybe why we kind of continue to screw up, because we think that it must be some kind of complex, scheme to how we should live our lives in order to be happy.
Well, yeah, you're kind of describing, you know, control, like, you know, these people who are controlling the messages that the masses kind of receive. Part of what they implant in people is to imitate them and to be controlling.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the infestation, is that it makes them controlling as well. So you get all these little controllers running around trying to control everything. And you could have somebody who's completely you know, innocent or just minding their own business, and one of these controllers comes along and they'll just tear them up, you know. So you have to be able to be savvy enough to maintain your integrity, your aura integrity, and hold that stuff out. And no matter what, don't let it in and don't let it have its way. It's got to be met on the ground.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's a perfect place to end this interview, Christopher. And once again, tell people about your website and about how to get your books and so forth before we finish off here.
Sure, yeah, come visit me and all of us over at the Creative Cosmos, creativecosmos.org. And we've set up a little gift shop at creativecosmosgiftshop.com that has some of my writing on there and some of artwork and music and some t-shirts and bags and a lot of interesting stuff there that just kind of, you know, some of these symbols, I feel like the Om symbol or the yin yang, or, you know, I try to incorporate these, and also the Creative Cosmos symbol, just to kind of keep that healing mindset out in the air, just to keep awareness as a part of everyday life, to always remember and never forget, and keep the perspective and to stay strong and to know that following my inner truth is always a good thing to do. So that's creativecosmos.org, and all kinds of ways to participate and all kinds of things to look at. So come on by, visit us.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you, Henrik.
Red Eyes Creations Radio. Thank you for being a subscriber. Your support keeps RedEyesCreations.com alive. Until next time, take care.